Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 83. And if you want to listen to this one and our previous 82 or so episodes, feel free to like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you'd like. You can also listen to us on our website, blackandwhiteredallover.com. And with the usual business out of the way, we shall try and have a more offensive and entertaining kind of day as compared to what we just watched a few hours ago. So, hello, Sam.
I certainly think that we could muster a couple of shots at the team as opposed to the team mustering shots at Milan's goal. I think we can definitely outperform them in that way, don't you, Gary?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We've got our loyal Dutchman. Hello, Chucks.
Hey, yeah, it definitely wasn't champagne football today, but yeah, let's break it all down and, well, I don't know, have alcohol-free champagne?
Alcohol-free champagne.
I guess that's the closest equivalent I can come up with.
And last but not least, back from his week off in Vegas, Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas, happy to be here. I did notice you said offensive, so is this the episode would get canceled? Like, is this the one? Did we make, like, how many episodes before we finally managed to do something really, really, like, offensive?
Yes, the woke mob might be coming for us.
That sounds like a plan to me.
All right, well, on that note, Sergio, I'm going to throw it right back to you since you weren't here last week. Your takeaway from the week that was?
It was, like, every week before it, and I'm guessing every week after it. Just some good, some bad, some boring. And, you know, like Danny said, like I was tweeting, actually, you know, I didn't really get to catch the Coppa Italia game live, but I saw some of the replays. I saw some of the highlights. You know, you could see a lot of good stuff going on with the club, but then back again, you turn around, you face one of the better teams in Serie A, and, you know, you get kind of like the same grindy style, kind of like everything is hard. And that's kind of how this team has continued to be, right? Like everything is hard. Like nothing comes easy for this team, just especially in the offensive side, but in general, like just nothing comes easy for this club right now. And, you know, I was noticing against Milan, especially, you know, when pretty much only out of like two or three players have like a decent first touch, and everyone else is just kind of like a rougher touch, or like they go backwards, or they have to, like, there's no fluidity. And that just, it's rough watching. But if you want to look on the bright side, I guess they're not leaking goals anymore. So, you know, there's always, you can always find good things, bad things, and boring things with Juventus this year.
As we go in reverse order around my Zoom window, Chucks, you're up next, bud.
Oh, you have the same Zoom window as I do. Oh, remarkable. my takeaway is that, you know, clearly in January, it seems, I mean, we have what, 7-8 days? What is it today? Yeah, about 8 days left of the month. Pretty clear to me that we're not going to make any signings in the transfer window, in this transfer window, which is fine. But what I did notice, or I guess kind of thought about, or just kind of hit me today/this week was that, you know, having bad players that we had written off and just said, okay, he's a wash, let's, you know, can't wait to get rid of him. When those players somehow surprisingly have a good run of form again, it is like a new signing. You know, it might sound a little cliche, but it really is like a new signing. And in this case, I'm talking about two semi-new signings, which are Daniele Rugani and Mattia De Ciglio, who have just, yeah, played very well recently. You know, credit where credit is due. I mean, you know, sample size of what, 4 or 5-ish games, I think. But yeah, I mean, this just again this week and, you know, today against Milan, just, yeah, realizing again, like, wow, if we actually somehow have players that, you know, for whatever reason, when they were just written off and just playing terribly, When they suddenly out of nowhere come back again and play well, you know, same counts for Bernardeschi. That, yeah, it feels like a new signing, and that is very helpful when we're not making any signings. So, you know, long may it last.
I will say, Chucks, there are a few points, and we'll obviously get into more about the Milan game later. There were a few points where Rafael Leao made Mr. Desciglio look more than just a little silly.
Yeah, although Leao just has pace to burn. I mean, he's so fast. But yeah, no, I did. There were some very nervy moments. But I mean, overall, I mean, given especially the difference in pace between two, I think came out relatively unharmed. But yeah, it was still nice, definitely.
All right, Sam, what you got for us?
For the last couple of months, Dusan Vlahovic has been the name on everybody's lips when it comes to Juventus and transfers, either in the winter window or in the summer window next year. We really have to start talking about the fact that Dusan Vlahovic is not going to do anything for this team if the rest of the team can't actually create a chance. And we saw that today in the Milan game, where we're looking at a team that this wasn't just a matter of, like, the team wasn't getting the final ball in. They weren't even getting the third to last or fourth to last ball in. Like, this was a really rough game when it came to Juventus putting the ball forward. I mean, Alvaro Morata didn't have a particularly good game in his hold-up play either, but you also can't really say, you can't be too harsh on him, because he only had really the one opportunity again to put a ball on frame, because nothing was being created. It shows again that, you know, the way that especially the midfield, Manuel Locatelli is good, although even he wasn't playing particularly well today. That had to do with, I think, a number of factors. But apart from Locatelli, the midfield doesn't have a good mix of players, and it doesn't necessarily have the right guys that can get you where you need to go, get the ball where it needs to go to even create the opportunity. Juventus didn't have a single shot on target today. They barely had a shot, period. They didn't have very many shots, period. Vlahovic isn't going to do anything if he does come either this window or next, if he doesn't have the ball in front of goal. And I think that it's the first focus needs to be on getting the players that will do that. And then we can focus on the guys who are going to finish the chances later.
So let me just be clear. You are disagreeing with Tutto Sports headline in Monday morning's paper where it says, Juve, you need Vlahovic.
Yeah, I kind of am, because what would Vlahovic have done? Tell me what difference Dusan Vlahovic would have made for Juventus in this game. What he would have probably had the exact same header that he had from that cross from Juan before Juan went off. And other than, or was that even Desciglio with the cross? I think it was Desciglio with the cross. And
yes, it was Desciglio.
Yeah, it was Desciglio with the cross. But that was, Morata had one opportunity. Kane had none. The only other one was McKennie. There's nothing that Vlahovic would change if he's not getting the ball. And the way the team is playing right now, he wouldn't be getting the ball. So he wouldn't be able to put the ball in the net anyway.
And on a related note, my short takeaway comes on the same day in which he underwent knee surgery on his torn ACL, is that I miss Federico Chiesa.
I miss him terribly as well. Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah,
I was going to make that point too, actually, like kind of the poetic, well, strangely poetic justice of on the day that we got the news that Chiesa is going to miss 7 months of action.
Not just on the day, Chucks, 10 minutes before kickoff.
Even that close that we had arguably our worst offensive performance of the season with a grand total of zero shots on target.
Yeah, and that's obviously where we're going to put our focus this week, is that Juventus had and I've said it in pretty much everything I've written the last 24 hours, they had a golden opportunity to get into fourth place with Atalanta playing out, ironically, a scoreless draw against Lazio on Saturday. And instead of, you know, coming out firing and looking dangerous, they did about the opposite of that. And I think In some ways, they were lucky to get into the half without being behind, just the way with Milan was playing. And I guess we could start the discussion there is, you know, we know that Max Allegri is going to be conservative more often than not, that just because that's his nature. But in a game like this, I mean, it hurts to, or maybe not hurt, but it was just tough to see them be as conservative as they were, knowing that you go into the international break in fourth place, albeit with Atalanta having a game in hand, and you're feeling good about things. And now it's like, okay, yeah, they've still got an unbeaten streak. I believe it's at 9 games, but it's not necessarily the same good vibes as would have happened with a win, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the problem right now with Juventus is, and it feels like we've been saying it for a year now, and it's as true a year ago as it is now. This is not a bad result in and of itself. You know, Milan is a top three team. They've been playing really well this year. They've been playing really well for the last couple seasons, going into their house and really with a pretty shorthanded squad, kind of, you know, beat them, like really play them really even. Granted, boring, but even, you know, it's not a bad result, but you started the season so badly and you needed every single result to go your way that now it's like, oh man, that's a bummer that we couldn't beat Milan away. You know, it is what it is. It's the type of season that they force themselves to have, in which they can no longer have okay results. They need a good to great result pretty much every time out. And it is a bit of a, you know, like you said, it's not such a good feel. But it, to me, if you want to look at it in a positive light, is that, you know, this team is slowly but surely at least starting to look more like an old Allegri side, in the sense that at least they're solid defensively, they're compact, they're not making the early mistakes that we were seeing. There's some progress happening. The offensive part of the game, still an issue. It's probably going to remain an issue, but at least you're starting to see a team that is more likely to grind out a result and just not make any mistakes and be a tough team to beat, something we were not necessarily seeing early in the year. I think if they continue to build on this and they continue to improve and they still, you know, continue to be this tough team to beat, I think as a whole in the rest of the season, I think they're going to be okay. I think it's a bummer that, like Danny said, they're not in fourth place right now. But as we look into the international break, I'm a lot more cautiously optimistic about the outlook for this team, because they're starting to do the little things right, at least defensively, at least in terms of not making any mistakes. And I think that that's something that they can build on moving forward. I mean, they have the third best defense in the league. So that's not nothing, right? So I do believe that in the long run, teams that are just hard to beat, they're going to be okay much more often than not.
Yeah, but you do eventually need to score the goals in order to get the points. And
yeah, like, for sure. Yeah, and look, this Milan was really good. You also have to give them props. They're a good team. Like, it's not easy to beat them. They were scoring four goals. Like, you know, they can. This was a tough match. It wasn't a great match.
They are a good team.
Also performance, but it was okay considering the circumstances.
They're a good team, but also you have to think about the circumstances of this game, in that not only did Juventus have no shots on goal on target today, they did that against Milan's second choice set of center backs, and going so far as one of them is a converted fullback in Pierre Kalulu. Like, you're going up against, you know, because Simon Kjær, you know, he tore his ACL a month or two ago, which, you know, is one of the least deserved karmic moments in the history of mankind after what he did this summer when Christian Eriksen had his heart attack. For him to go down like that is awful. Tomori is out until at least March. He had keel surgery on his knee. You're looking at Alessio Romagnoli, who hadn't played a game in this calendar year, and a fullback playing center back.
To be fair, it's January.
Yes, it's true, but still, we're almost at the end of January.
I was going to say the same thing.
But Romagnoli is you know, he still wears the captain's armband when he's on the field, but he is by no means a first choice for Pioli right now. And he is by no means the up and coming center back that we all thought he was going to be, you know, back when there were legitimate thoughts as to Daniele Rugani and Alessio Romagnoli being potentially the Italy center back pairing of the future.
And look at them today. Two of the best on the field.
Rugani might have been the best on the field. That was a hell of a performance by him today. But this was a Milan team that was vulnerable. Yes, they're a good team. They were also vulnerable. And then they lose Ibrahimovic within 20 minutes of the of kickoff. Milan's a good team, not a great team. I don't think they're a good team. They've obviously been good for their position in the table right now, but they're still not a team that has really made that next step into a genuine trophy threat. But they were vulnerable today. They were playing backups in their defense, and Allegri didn't attack them at all. And when you combine that approach with just the inability of the team to be able to present the ball to its goal scorers, you know, Morata and Dybala were both dropping into the midfield at the same time in certain points of this game, then you've got to have, you know, that you have to question it. Because, you know, when you have a big opportunity, a vulnerable opponent in defense, you know, and then you play the game, and Mike Maignan, the only thing he really had to do was keep Juan Cuadrado from scoring another Olympico in like the second minute when he punched that corner away. That was, which also, correct me if I'm wrong, might have been Juve's only corner of the game. I don't remember another corner. Like this was a flaccid offensive performance at a point where you really couldn't afford that.
I agree. And I think there's a lot of valid points you make. I'd also want to say, we're not good. Like, this team is not particularly good. They've been showing that for a while. And, you know, we still have that and I count myself for it. It's like, oh, this is not Juve. Like, just, you know, they were vulnerable. They were there for taking. Like, we should have won that game. It's like, I think we're a similar team. Like, I honestly think we're a similar team. I think, number one, I don't think that we're scoring a whole heck of a lot against any team in general. I mean, of the top nine teams in Serie A, we are the worst offense by at least like five or six goals. This team struggles to score. It's a thing. And we can debate here about whether it's because they lack a striker or because they don't generate chances. That's a whole other discussion. But they just can't score regardless of the team. And, you know, I think that's just who they are. And also, I think you have to give credit. I mean, that was a great game. I understand that Kalulu, like, that's not his natural position, but he played a hell of a game. Like, he was really, really good. The same thing that I bet Milan fans are saying, like, oh, we were lined up against Mattia De Sciglio and Daniele Rugani. How did we not freaking score on them? Like, it's the same thing, right? But Rugani played great. I mean, God knows I'm no fan of him, but he played great. I mean, De Sciglio, he's kind of showing his true colors now. But, you know, they played decently. So I think it's the same. I think we're similar teams. I think we both struggled. I think it was a grind fest. I don't think that this was a game. I agree that it was a game they should have had just because they need the point, because they've put themselves in the position that they need to have this team, these type of games. But in general, when you look at the teams, when you look at the state of both teams and what transpired on the field, is like, yeah, you can't be happy with it, because obviously no shots on goal. That, I mean, you obviously can't be happy with it. But I also don't think it's representative of, you know, something super different than what we've been seeing. I think this is who they are. I think it's a decent result, all things considered. And look, credit to Milan. They played a really good team. Dybala was on absolute fire coming into this game. And he had some flashes. He had some moments. But, you know, they contained him pretty well. You know, I think my hat's off to them. They played really, really well defensively. You know, subs or not, I think they played really well, and you got to give it to them, especially against a team like us that just struggles to score. And will probably continue to struggle, to score in what remains of the season. I think that's just who they are right now.
Yeah, and just on the point of the offense again, it's like I think Sergio, you mentioned, is it the fault of the strikers that we're not scoring? I mean, I think that's kind of like the same question we ask when the team is conceding a lot of goals and we're like, oh, our center backs or goalies even, oh, are they terrible or not? No, I mean, just like defending is a team game, team effort. I mean, defending starts from the front, quite literally. You know, attacking likewise is also a team effort. And in terms of our strikers, I mean, they're more than capable enough to score, I mean, more goals for the team than they have already. Obviously, Dybala, we know, is by far our best, especially now that Chiesa's injured, he's by far the best attacking player, the most talented one. And then Morata, you know, Morata's no world beater, obviously, but I still believe he's more than capable enough to score, you know, 15 goals a season or something. You know, we're on match day 23, I believe now. That was just match day 23 for us. And Morata has all of 5 goals. So, you know, I mean, he is more capable. He should be, you know, he should be able to score more goals. But that said, I don't think that's really down to him. For instance, from today's game, you know, I noticed that in general, the only player really carrying the ball out of defense / midfield, kind of connecting to the strikers, really was Cuadrado. He was the only one that I noticed that was kind of, yeah, doing that, which is, I think, down to his speed and definitely his speed over the first, like, you know, 5 to 10 meters. And just his dribbling ability, he can kind of, you know, he definitely has the ability to, like, skip past, like, you know, one player and then drive it forward a little bit and then pass it into Dybala and stuff. And like you said, Sam, you know, Dybala, which he's done, I think, very much recently, is effectively a central midfielder at some times in the game with how deep he drops. But yeah, I mean, if you know, Cuadrado is, I mean, a semi-right back, semi-right midfielder, and he's basically, you know, the only one connecting the midfield / defense with the attack. That's not very good. And then if you have half your strike force that, you know, in Dybala, who's basically a central midfield, yeah, you know, you kind of see the problems there. So I don't think it's a lack of talent or ability. I think it's just the attacking issues, not a lack of talent or ability, but some kind of, I don't know, tactical imbalance, something there. I don't know. But that said, like Sergio said, I mean, you know, this team is, I mean, at best a top four, a fourth place side this season anyway, you know, at best, which I think eventually we'll make it. But yeah, I mean, we're no world beaters at the same time. We should be better. We should be scoring more, but not dramatically more, I think.
Something that you talked about there, Chucks, in terms of getting the ball out of your own half, connecting the lines. And this was talked about on Paramount's post-game show and pre-game show once the lineups came out. And it's one of the things that I struggle with in terms of trying to figure out what Max Allegri was thinking going into this game, was we've seen in the last couple of weeks, if you have Manuel Locatelli and Artur combined in midfield, Juventus has suddenly becomes a much more dangerous attacking side. And we saw that for the Sampdoria game where, you know, Artur played back and Juve moved forward and they just knocked the stuffing out of Sampdoria in the Coppa Italia headed to get into the quarterfinals. It bears doing in bigger games than that to see if it works when you have to level up. And not only was Artur on the bench to start today, when he did go on, he came on for Locatelli. Now, there were other reasons for that. Obviously, Locatelli was on a yellow card and had been since the very early parts of the game. And it was probably a good idea for him to come off. But it makes no sense to me why you, after looking at between the Roma game and Sampdoria, to see those two on the pitch and see the difference that it makes with Artur farther back and Locatelli moving forward to orchestrate more in the attacking third, that in a game that is such a big opportunity, Allegri declines to do it at all. And then the result again is an attack that looked dead. Danny, do you remember late last season when Bayern Munich, when our sister blog at the Bayern Munich at Bavarian Football Works were talking about reports that Allegri had been connected to the Bayern job, and they were very much against it. And one of the reasons they listed on their article was suicidal pragmatism.
Yes.
It's a very pretty
and
term.
Yeah. The guys at Bayern knew that firsthand when Allegri messed up at the end of that that round of 16 tie and let them back into the game a couple of years ago. But this was an example of where that really does apply and fit for Allegri. There was no reason to go into this game not going for it. And Allegri kind of didn't go for it. He took a very outdated, very Italian, stereotypically Italian view of this game, which was to sit back and hit on the counter for no reason other than the fact that it was an away game against a bigger name club. That struck a discordant tone with me, because when Juve are at a point where, because they need these results, like Sergio said, because they screwed up so many results at the beginning of the season, that they now need every single result that they can possibly get, why are you have to be proactive as opposed to reactive in this situation to get these results. And Allegri is not doing that. And it's really frustrating to see that he's not putting what looks like the best mix of players that he has available onto the field.
But then again, that's like, I guess, you know, you're right, obviously, but it's like, in a way, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, we've known Allegri for 6 years now with the club. And unfortunately, that's not, I guess that's not really a surprise. Just that, you know, everything you just described, like, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's how we know him. So, I mean, he's not going to change at this age. He's not going to change that, I think, as a person and as a coach. You know, just very quickly before you move on, that point about Locatelli, you know, that's, yeah, definitely a good point. I just wanted to emphasize that as well. And we saw that mostly, or yeah. I mean, I'd say, yeah, mostly in the Sampdoria game in the Coppa Italia when, yeah, Locatelli played further forward in midfield and, yeah, looked really very good. I mean, of course, it's Samp. I mean, a very decimated Samp side and, you know, not particularly good. But still, he showed, you know, very positive signs, he seems very comfortable there. I think that's really more the thing, just that he seemed very comfortable a little higher up the pitch. And that goes back to the old attacking issues of, you know, I don't think it's, despite, again, Morata's, you know, lack of scoring touch in front of goal, which, you know, again, partly I think is to be expected, but partly, yeah, you know, he should have a few more goals. But I mean, I don't expect Morata to hit anything above 15 league goals anyway this season. But that's part of the tactical piece of the puzzle of, okay, if you have a player like Locatelli higher up the pitch, then that, I speculate, and I think decent reason to speculate there, that might solve some of the offensive problems, because we'll have, yeah, just better connection between midfield and attack. You have a player that's, you know, pretty decently creative that high up the pitch. And you don't have Dybala being essentially the only attacking creative, you know, especially in the passing sense, like the only passing creative player that high up the pitch. You likely have more chances created for someone like Morata then, and well, I'll assume more goals then as well. So, yeah, just again to kind of reiterate that point of like, it's likely more of a tactical piece of the puzzle to be solved there rather than, you know, get Dusan Vlahovic or anything like you mentioned, Sam.
One other bit before we really move on to the other thing. Also, again, talking in about Locatelli and tangentially, but, you know, he got that yellow card for that slide in on Tonali, which was one of only four yellow cards that Marco Di Bello gave all match. This was a terribly refereed game. Di Bello was more like Di Brutto, if you ask me, because he lost control of that game in the first half.
Yeah, there was when you've got both managers on the touchline begging for more yellow cards in the first half.
In the first half, there were 23 combined fouls in the first half.
Yeah, and there probably should have been more.
And yeah, there most probably. And hold on, I just want to look at the actual full on number. 35, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it was in the 35. I know it's in the
total 30. Fouls.
Yeah,
35 total fouls in that game, and only 4 yellow cards. And we're not, and we're also talking like. Like there was one moment where I think it was it Brahim Diaz who straight up pulled Juan Cuadrado back by the arm as he was breaking away. It was a clear tactical foul and no card. I thought that it was.
And then the same thing happened to, I believe it was Brahim Diaz in the second half.
Yeah.
And they're begging for a card.
Yeah, they're begging for a card. And
come on.
And, you know, both teams had a semi-legitimate shout for a penalty. I mean, they were both, you know, both Calabria and Morata went down pretty easy on those plays, but we've seen both of those called before this season. I mean, my personal inclination is that neither one of them was a penalty, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, he let so much go. And then, you know, there was one moment where I think he totally let go McKennie, like shoving somebody over from behind. And then Bentancur won a ball clean along the sideline and he called a foul on that. Like this was a recurring story. And really just not just this game, but in general, is that the standard of officiating in Italy right now is awful. Awful. That, you know, the days of Pierluigi Collina and Roberto Rossetti are no longer here. It sucks. It really sucks today, the officiating.
We want to talk one thing before we get into a few Twitter questions here, and that's a story that came out from Tutto Sport a couple of days ago, and it involved Juventus's, I believe, 6 soon-to-be free agents whose contracts all expire this summer. The most notable one, obviously, being Paulo Dybala, who we talked about in detail last week after his non-celebration goal celebration and stare down of the Juventus front office in the stands. And the story basically evolved around Maurizio Arrivabene's plan, at least from Tutto Sport's knowledge, and obviously it's Tutto Sport, so sometimes you have to take things with a grain of salt. But it involved Tutto Sport reporting that Juventus is going to ask all 6 of those soon-to-be free agents to take a pay cut of 15%, which maybe for Carlo Pensolio, hey, you're the third keeper. Okay, that doesn't have a big impact on things. But when it comes to Paulo Dybala, whose contract extension talks have gone on for the better part of 2 years, taking a 15% pay cut after everything that has happened over the last few months with an offer supposedly being done and then not being done. And now supposedly it's February when the next round of talks will happen between Dybala's camp and Juventus. This is going to make for some interesting contract talks outside of Dybala, because you've got Cuadrado, you've got Bernardeschi, you've got the 2 backup goalkeepers in Perin and Pensolio, and then Matteo Diciglio as well. So this is, from one point of view, this is Juventus obviously trying to lower the, and let me start over with that thought. If this turns out to be the truth, this is Juventus obviously trying to bring down their payroll, which has been a top of Serie A for years. But it's also quite an interesting tactic to take with some very important players who, if they get upset, could conceivably not be part of this team next season.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what Arrivabene is really, really thinking. If he actually thinks that he can do this and get away with it, especially when you look at a thing like Paulo Dybala, who, you know, at least, you know, several months ago, you have the reports that that there's a handshake agreement on a raise, and now they're asking him to take a pay cut, coupled with, like, again, that we mentioned that last week, the needlessly antagonistic comments that Arrivabene made about Dybala in particular. You've also got, you know, as early as October, I remember hearing an agreement with Cuadrado, and that, you know, has not come to fruition either. And he's really important as well. If this is true, we're looking at one or both of these things is also true. Either Arriva Bene is vastly out of his depth when it comes to negotiating soccer contracts coming in from a place like F1, and he just is inexperienced and is showing it, or two, this club is so skint that we can't actually operate without this happening. And like, it wouldn't take that much to convince me that if it wasn't for Exor backing everything up, Juventus would be looking for a buyer right now. You know, are the finances really that bad? You know, and also this is a front office that has been inclined to the overpay for a really long time. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we're doing this now. But you look at, when you look at the salaries of guys like Rabiot and Ramsey, but you know, we've been talking about the financial situation of the team for a long time. And this is just yet another part of the situation where this is bad. Like, and Juve could really be paralyzed when it comes to roster development for quite some time. And it makes you think, well, where is the money for a guy like Vlahovic coming, which would be, you know, 60 or 70 million euros plus a hefty salary? None of it adds up. And we're going to have to see how everything goes in the summertime. But yeah, this is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally very wary of commenting on speculations. I made the comment, I think, a week or two ago that, you know, with contract negotiations, it's like, you know, we obviously don't know what happens in the background. We don't know what happens in the meeting. So we're, quite frankly, all just kind of guessing. But anyway, just kind of speculating, which is something I said I wouldn't do, but to...
Do it.
The only thing I'll point out is just the kind of bizarre inconsistency there. So again, assuming some kind of speculation there was true about the handshake agreements between Cuadrado and the club and Dybala and the club some time ago, like a month or two ago or whatever it was, assuming that that's true, I mean, that wasn't a long time ago, you know, so then for them to, again, supposedly have, okay, a handshake agreement for a raise or at least just the same salary, and then to go a month or two later, not so long later, to then say, oh, actually, never mind. You're not only not getting a raise, you're going back 15%. That if again, this is all true, which nobody knows, but if again, this is true, to me, it's just the inconsistency there, which tells me that there must be some shocking piece of information that they got between, you know, when they gave those informal agreements to, you know, the time of this report of, you know, the pay cut. The only thing that could explain that is that, yeah, that there was some kind of catastrophic piece of information that they got that just dramatically changed their negotiation position, or just, yeah, their, I guess, policy on wages of the club. But yeah, that's all I could really think of. And yeah, who knows, again, nobody knows if this is true, but yeah,
I guess I agree with Chuck's caveat. You know, it's rumor mill season, especially with the international break coming, especially with Paulo Dybala doing his celebration antics, public sub tweeting thing. Obviously, like, the press is going to grasp to that, so, you know, caveat. But you know, with all that said, you know, it's shocking that, you know, before, I remember the contract extensions for guys like Sami Khedira, who, you know, I always liked, but no one was really claiming for Sami Khedira to get it renewed. And the renewal was done pretty much, like, there were no rumors, pretty much no leeway, was just done, period. Like, I think a couple other guys were like that, probably Mario Mandzukic. Like, we had a couple of renewals like that were just almost immediately, just no hassle, boom, renewed. And I understand that they're not the same amounts of money, that they signed for significantly less money than, you know, what Paulo Dybala might be asking for. But it is stark, the difference between how Juventus used to conduct business and how that business is being conducted right now, in which, you know, regardless of what you feel about the renewals of I think the two most important guys of the ones that are running out of contract, which is Pablo Dybala and Juan Cuadrado. I think those two dudes, I mean, it's shocking to me that you don't get that done. That you don't, and I'm sorry, I think Juan Cuadrado is not, like, his contract's not expiring. I think they're renewing him. But Robert, that's another renewal that has been going on for quite a while. Like, we've been hearing that they're going to get that done for months now, and they just don't get it done. So it is shocking and a very stark difference in how Juventus is handling this whole renewal business right now. I understand wanting to wait for dudes like Federico Bernardeschi or Matteo Di Siglio, whose form is up and down. I get that those might be renewals that you want to wait for as long as possible before maybe overcommitting to a guy like that. But I mean, you're talking about two out of your best three offensive players, and you are a few months away from losing at least Dybala for nothing. So it really is. I think if there's truth to this, I think it really paints a very, you know, a very bad picture of the club and its finances. We all know that they're not doing super great in that regard, but I think this might be the biggest indicator, because you're not even talking about shelling out a lot of money in a transfer fee. It's just kind of like a contract renewal. You're already paying the guy. You're just going to pay him slightly more just financially. I think it's not the same as shelling out for a massive transfer fee, which I understand they don't have. But if it's even this, like if they're unable to just renew the guys they already have, it's looking tough. It's looking tough for Juve fans. It's looking tough for Juventus. I think we might be staring at the face of a rebuild of course, they're not going to say rebuild. They're going to say renewal or whatever it is, like a flashy other word. But it is going to be a definite big, big change in the ways if they can't get this done.
And obviously, you know, kind of connecting the dots from the past now, it's like, okay, you know, why do you bring in somebody like Arrivabene? Well, he's not necessarily a football guy, but he's a business guy. So in part, and I assume that part is rather large considering what Juve's finances have been the last few years, his job is to try and get the financial portion of the club in better order. And how do you do that? Well, you try and not only say get younger, but you also try and cut the cost of what you currently have. So obviously getting rid of Ronaldo's massive salary will help the books, at least longer term, you would think. But getting rid of Ramsey will help. But if you can somehow get the likes of Cuadrado and to a lesser extent Bernardeschi and others who are on bigger salaries to agree to lesser salaries, then that will help. And would you trust somebody like Pavel Nedved to try and get that done? Or would you trust somebody from a club point of view, would you trust somebody like Arrivabene to try and get that done? And I think I would go with the businessman rather than the passionate Patrick Swayze lookalike.
I mean, yeah, but also, I mean, Arrivabene is coming in from Ferrari's F1 team, and they didn't do particularly well under his auspices. I have a very limited knowledge of F1.
That's also part of the problem. And I have a fill us in limited... if we're right on, Sergio, since it seems like you follow F1 more than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they haven't been great. Great. but it's like, you know, obviously it's not the same, but it's a completely different thing, because the spots in F1 rosters are so, like, you have two drivers per team. There's 10 teams, there's 20 posts. Pretty much the teams have absolutely all the leverage, right? Because there are so few spots and everyone wants them that, you know, they kind of can play. You know, obviously, some pilots earn a lot more than others, but you kind of have the negotiating power is with you. Instead of in football, look, if Juventus doesn't want to pay Paulo Dybala his 8, 9, 10 million, whatever, you have at least like 10 Premier League clubs who are just going to jump at that chance immediately. Like, this is not, yeah, this is not something where you can be like, oh, but you love it here. Like, you really like Juventus. What, like, you know, there's a lot of other teams that if suddenly Paulo Dybala is available, they are going to pay him what he wants. Like, that's just a fact. Like, you can only put it on the player for so long until it's like, well, okay, you don't want to pay me this. A lot of other teams will. So I think they just put themselves in just such a bad, bad negotiating position that it's really, I mean, if they brought this guy for his business acumen, I mean, that's just not super great that his very first big contract renewal with one of your star players is going so poorly. And, you know, that's neither here nor there, but I know that the whole Ronaldo thing was done with marketing in mind. I think easily your second most marketable player was Paulo Dybala. If you lose him, then, you know, I mean, what are you doing? What are you following? What's the plan? It just seems like they have no real, you know, way forward. They don't know what they want to do or what they want to be. And unless they figure that out, I think we're just going to continue to see this type of, you know, bumbling sort of strategies because they don't really know what they want to do.
And also, Sergio, to your point that, you know, the difference between how in the past the renewals seem to just kind of come without any big fanfare or you know, rumor mill or anything like that, there is one single difference between then and now in that regard. And that difference is Giuseppe Marotta.
I was going to say, is he currently employed by Inter?
He is currently, unfortunately, employed by Inter. Pepe did things right. And since he left, the Juve front office really has not. You know, there. You know, you can say, you know, yeah, De Ligt, signing De Ligt, that's, you know, good call, good move. Signing Locatelli, good move. But really, what there's, you know, the negatives far outweigh the positives with this front office ever since Beppe Marotta was forced out. And then, of course, he goes to your most hated rival and turns them into the team that ends your winning streak. And they're only trending up. They lose Conte, they lose Lukaku, and they look even better than they did last year. And, you know, here we are looking at all Juventus is doing is just promoting the next guy in line that has at Exor or within their own hierarchy and expecting different results. You know, at some point things have to be shaken up. You've got to get, you know, we got Beppe Marotta from outside of the club. You know, we got him when he was at Sampdoria. He got Sampdoria into the Champions League qualifiers, for God's sakes. It's really, I think, it's time to start looking outside the organization for that renewal again and the front, from when it comes to the front office, because I don't think anybody, I think there are too many Andrea Agnelli yes men right now who, and it's becoming more and more clear that Agnelli has lost this plot. He's lost this thread. And it's just going to, right now, it just keeps on going downhill from the front office perspective.
And I think it's just that they need to stop thinking like Juventus of 2017, 2018, you know, where they were at the top of the world making 80, 90 million euro signings. I think they're just not that club anymore. Just, you know, COVID, Ronaldo, whatever, you know, whatever is your reason of choice, they're just not there right now. I do not want to hear Juventus linked with Blachowicz. Like, they just don't have the money. They won't have the money. That is not who they should be chasing. To me, who Juventus should be chasing is your Carlos Tevez, your Arturo Vidal's, your Andrea Barzagli's, dudes that, you know, they're not expensive, that you're taking, sure, gambles. They were, at the time, they were gambles that paid off. They're not expensive. You have to be looking for the next guy. You have to be looking for the guy that you can afford right now and then that is going to develop and that you're going to build your team that way. Because Juventus is right now, they cannot compete and they will not compete against the Premier League teams. They cannot compete for the finished product. They should not be even in the same remote world as Blachowicz or Haaland. All those dudes are going to go for like three figures in the millions, right? Like, they have to go back to that. That was what made them successful. That's how they really built that team. making those smart, savvy, cheap moves a la Weston McKennie. I thought, to me, that was the first one that was like, yeah, that's an old school vintage Juventus move in which you get a guy that absolutely no one outside of the United States even knows about, unless you're a Schalke fan, who, you know, maybe there are some out there, but, you know, nobody knew about the guy. You loan him, he's suddenly really good, and now you have a really good, really cheap player, really young player on your squad. Like, that's how Juventus build their best teams of this past decade. And they suddenly kind of turned away from that because they suddenly had the money to do it, but you're right back into the position that you don't have the money to do it anymore. You have to go back to that. And I think they're still not quite, I don't know, I guess they haven't really realized that yet. But that's the way forward for Juventus, I think.
I've said it before. This is what happens when you act like a brand and not like a football club.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the future of football, really, at this point. Yeah, desperate, despair for revenue. So we're going to have to be a brand, as much as I hate it.
Before we transition to a couple Twitter questions to wrap things up, I will basically just point out, and the baseball fans on the podcast will know what I'm saying. My baseball team was very bad for a couple of years after a very good run of success with 3 titles in 5 years. And then they tried to operate things the way they did during those championship years. Sometimes that doesn't always work out. And the guys in charge were replaced. Why? Because sometimes in sports, you just need new ideas in the building. And I feel like Juventus is at the point, especially now, and unfortunately, the coach is Max Allegri, who doesn't seem to have very many new ideas with the way he wants to play his football. But Juventus just needs some new ideas in the building. And who knows if that's actually going to happen, or like Sam said, we're just going to keep promoting from within. Let's jump into a couple of Twitter questions to wrap things up here. First one, which was actually submitted literally minutes after we stopped recording last week, but he made sure to send it again this week, from at @Juventino_BNA. If he doesn't come back to pre-injury form immediately, will Federico Chiesa be given a couple years to change his game like Alessandro Del Piero was given after his injury?
I think he will get that chance just because they haven't paid for him yet. So, I mean, it's hard for me to see them, you know, buying him and then immediately selling him. Like, I mean, they're stuck with Chiesa for better or for worse. I think it's going to be for better. I mean, I think, you know, medical technology has advanced so much in the last few years that, you know, when an injury was an ACL injury, even 15, 20 years ago, that was it. That, like, it was a career-ending type of sort of deal. And now you're getting guys, even in like the NFL, you have guys that have that injury and are back within 5-6 months in a obviously much more physical game than soccer. So I think he's young. I think he has pretty much everything, you know, on his sides to make a full comeback, to make a return, and to be the same guy that we know he can be and that he has been in the recent past. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. But in the completely awful scenario in which his career is never quite the same, I think Juventus is going to ride it out with him because they just have so much invested in Chiesa. And, you know, to me, it's a similar case to Saniolo over in Roma, right? Like, they're not going to sell cheap on him because who wants a guy that's like injury prone and you don't know if he's going to come back to be the same guy that he was. And they've invested in him, so they're just going to ride it out and see if he pans out, right? So I think Juventus is going to go kind of like the same way. I think they're going to give him every shot of getting back to being the player that we know he can be.
I could have sworn you said Saniol just a second ago. And I was like, wait, he's a coach now. What are you talking about? I agree. I think you've got to, there's too much invested in Chiesa to just write him off if he doesn't come back off that injury. And like you also said, Sergio, I think medical science, I mean, there still is the odd knee injury like Claudio Marchisio that just kind of makes it all kaput. Although Marchisio was significantly older than Chiesa when he got hurt. But, you know, if we had the same kind of medical science, you know, the acumen that they have now when it comes to dealing with knee injuries back when Del Piero got hit, had his knee injury in the 90s, his career path might have been a lot different for the better, because, I mean, he had to significantly alter his game after that knee injury. And he still ended up being one of the all-time legends of the game. But, you know, who knows what he could have been if he had the kind of way that we deal with knees now. But yeah, I think that Chiesa will be fine. I think the one thing that does slightly worry me is, should Italy get through their qualifying bracket and make their way back to the World Cup, which is happening in November, I worry about him trying to rush his way back to get into that World Cup roster when, you know, his recovery time frame currently has him pretty much ready for the opening of the season next year. But Juve really should take him slower and not go too far too fast with him, because he is, especially if something, you know, if Paulo Dybala ends up playing on another team next season, he is your marketing. Like, he is your front and center. He is everything about your team at that point. You have to make sure that he works his way back fully before you throw the entire load onto him. You know, slow play him. And this is one of the things that kind of resulted in a bit of a breakdown in their relationship. But Antonio Conte kind of really slow played reintroducing Fabio Quagliarella back into the team in 2011-12 after Quagliarella had that knee injury in January of 2011. It probably ended up being better for Quagliarella in the long run, although Quagliarella, I think, would have wanted to play more at the beginning. But, you know, then he ended up doing really well there. So just don't rush him back, and then I think everything will be fine.
I'll just add one small quick thing. I mean, Chiesa, he's only 24 years old, so it's just too early to tell. Yeah, it's too early to tell if, like, you know, writing him off after this injury or not. Yeah, let's just give him time. And I mean, in terms of the World Cup thing, you know, yeah, I mean, I was reading 7 months that he has, so that'll put him around early September. And then, yeah, the World Cup starts in what, November. So, you know, you would have like a month and a half basically to get to match fitness, which, I mean, I think is reasonable. So I'm not too worried about that, I guess. And yeah, I mean, like I said, he's only 24 years old. It's too, you know, it's too early to tell on, like, you know, is this the end of him or is this the end of his Juve career or anything?
All righty. Next one here from @oldman_rod. Considering that he wasn't supposed to start against Milan on Sunday, how impressive was Daniele Rugani?
I think Sergio should answer this one first.
Yes, go for it, Sergio.
Yeah, he was fine. He was good.
Nice and to the point. All right, back to you with the weather. Yeah,
no, you're next. To be fair, I'm going to give him some credit, some love. I know I've been rough on him because he's been generally bad. But, you know, he was good. And to be honest, he's stepped up this month. He really has stepped up this month. I was okay with anything other than disastrous, and he's been much better than that. He's been above average pretty much consistently this month. I really did not see it coming. To me, I have, you know, Mattia De Siglio, Daniele Rugani, and Federico Bernardeschi kind of in the same bucket. It's like they have shown flashes and they have played good, but now you have Bernardeschi kind of, you know, falling back to earth after his great finish of 2021. And you have Mattia De Siglio having a so-so to bad game tonight against Milan after his, you know, little streak of good performances, you know, because, you know, the history is there that they're not that great. They have the talent to put good performances, to have flashes, to perform on occasion. You know, right now, I think we're seeing that from Rugani. And to his credit, he was the fourth, fifth choice center back. I mean, you know, he was not supposed to be playing like this, and he is. Well, you know, just ride it out until he turns back into the Daniele Rugani we all know and hate, and then, you know, you can you weather through the storm. So that's exactly his job, and he's doing it phenomenally. I mean, kudos to him. He's been just so much better than I thought he would be, which, granted, the bar was very low, but still, he's been pretty decent. Good job on him.
I thought he was the best Juventus player on the pitch.
He was good.
Who else was better on the pitch today?
I thought Bentancur maybe, which I've criticized him a lot.
Bentancur, I think, is the only person that has a real argument to get up there. But you know, he led the team in clearances. He was just, you know, anytime that there were a couple of times where they were trying to just feed Leao down his channel, and he just went in and said nah, and just got the ball out. It was, and he's started to get a little bit of a physical streak and a little bit of a mean streak in him, which is was always one of the knocks on his game. I think that he's, I mean, I certainly wouldn't be starting him in place of one of the other three center backs on the team if we absolutely, you know, if you're making that as a technical decision. But he, I think, had the best day out of anybody in black and white today.
Yeah, like I mentioned, you know, it feels like a new signing, honestly. Again, not like he's, you know, like, oh, the Ballon d'Or, but like the fact that he's competent and just, you know, playing well just means that, okay, we now have another option at center back in case we need to rest Ligt or, you know, Chiellini, or in case Bonucci stops being, supposedly a thug in the Inter game. I don't know, but
hurt. He's hurt.
Yeah. But I don't know. I read some things about the Inter game. I was like, oh dear.
Yeah.
But yes, again, speculation. But I don't know.
Allegedly.
What do I know?
All right, last question here from David Desberg at the True RAC. Too early, but similar to how we had this conversation last year. And considering, yes, the roster is problematic, and yes, we can't get rid of him, has Allegri shown you enough this season to make you confident in him moving forward? If so, why? If not, what are your reservations?
I mean, look, you know, Allegri, again, at this point, I guess the good and bad thing about him is that there are basically no surprises about him. You know, again, like the suicidal pragmatism was just a very poetic term. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just what you're going to get with him. There's nothing, like, when people criticize Allegri, you know, rightly mostly, but I just say, I mean, you know, look, this is not like, don't act surprised. I mean, this is not like, whoa, what a revelation. I mean, that's Allegri. Yeah, defensively, I think he's brought some stability back, where the tied for third best defense with our neighbors, Torino. So the city of Turin is keeping the goal clean. Yeah, so I mean, you know, again, defensively good. Yeah, offensively obviously not great. Yeah, overall at this point, I would give him, you know, at least another year for sure. Just again, I mean, you know, how many options are there out there? Yeah, how many options are there out there in terms of coaching? I know DJ Deschamps is a kind of long wished for coach at Juve, but I mean, he seems to be quite busy in France. So yeah, I mean, if not just for the reason of, I mean, there are no better options. So, yeah, I mean, just keep Allegri for now. And yeah, I have no particular issues. I think the bigger issue is obviously just the composition of the team. Yeah, I wish Allegri would take a little bit more risks. Again, with the whole Locatelli thing, playing him higher, further up the pitch, and then, I don't know, Locatelli, Artur, Rabiot, or just Locatelli, Artur, and someone else. Play Locatelli higher up the pitch. Yeah, a little more risk there. Yeah, sure. But besides that, again, I don't know. Yeah, keep him.
And the big concern that I have right now with Allegri is that, you know, in his first tenure, we always went through the cycle of, you know, a little bit of a bump in the early part of the season. Things aren't really clicking. And then eventually Allegri finds, you know, the right mix. He makes the formation change. He makes, you know, he comes up with an idea, like, you know, when the 4-2-3-1 came in during the 16-17 season, and you'd end up with the best Juve that you can see that he could put out, and they would start to perform better. I think we've seen the best lineup that I said this earlier. I think we've seen the best lineup that this team, that this roster can offer, but Allegri's not using it. And I don't understand why. You know, he's not going anywhere. Juventus cannot afford that kind of dead money right now. He's on a 9 million euro a year contract. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. But the one thing about Allegri that was always, you know, a constant, that idea that he would find the right mix and the team would rev up. It looks like he's discovered the right mix. He's just not using it. And whether that's because he's just too constitutionally against that kind of attacking lineup, or if it's something else entirely, we're going to, you know, we may never know, but he's got his best combo. We've seen it. We've seen what it can do. Yes, against lower level teams, but you've got to play the lower level teams, you know, too. If it works there, you've got to try to get in the big games, and he's not doing it. That's my big concern.
Yeah, I think it was the podcast right before the break, or the one we did during the break, and similar-ish question came on, that it was like, oh, what do you want to see? And I was just like, I want to see some improvement, some consistency, something that tells me that the ship might be headed in the right direction. And I think we're seeing that. I think when we signed up for Max Allegri 2.0, like Chuck said, it's like, we know what we're getting. Like, we know who he is. Like, he's not going to be suddenly a different manager. Like, we know who he is. He is going to be pragmatic. He's going to be boring. He's going to be defensively solid. And more often than not, you know, he's going to win games. And the first half of the Juventus season, I think we just didn't see that. It wasn't a pragmatic team. It wasn't defensively solid. It was boring, but we were not getting, you know, this was not what we bargained for, right? Like, they were not an Allegri team. And I think January, with as many, you know, ups and downs and you know, bad results and decent results and what have you, but I think we finally are starting to see that. I think we're finally starting to see Max Allegri figuring out some things, the team finally getting drilled down to the fact that they're once again very defensively solid, like I already said. I think, you know, I'm very much of the idea, and I've said this before, that this team, there's only so much you can do with this team. There's, you know, we have 3 years, three coaches, same results. This is not a particularly fantastic squad. There's only so much you're going to be able to do with this, guys. Is this the absolute best case scenario? Probably not. But I think he's doing a fine enough job with the people that he has, with the team that he has. I think you have to give him, obviously, like I said, this is a rhetorical question because they're absolutely not firing him. But, you know, I think things are moving in the right direction. I think things are moving in this is same old Allegri Bowl. And Allegri Bowl is not exciting. But you know what? You're going to win a lot of games. Or you're going to win a lot of titles that way, because we've seen that before. So I think the same way that we saw it with Andrea Pirlo, and I think, you know, I think Maurizio Sarri, he lost the locker room, so that's a different thing. But, you know, if he hadn't lost the locker room, I also agree that you should have given him at least another year. I think we should have given Andrea Pirlo at least another year. I definitely feel that you have to give Max Allegri enough time to figure out the team, to figure out transfers, to figure out who he wants to play for him, and then judge him. And I think that Juventus, you know, board is on that same page, because they gave him a very long contract. So I think it's just wait and see. It's a boring answer, because it's pretty much conceding that we're not going to win anything this year, or maybe the Copa, who knows. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it is Allegri. Of course, it's going to be boring, but in the long run, you know, he has shown to be a successful coach that wins. So you have to, I think you have to go with history here.
Sorry, Chuck, so it doesn't mean playing Aaron Ramsey as a Regista.
Yeah, that's a prediction that's going to haunt me till my grave, I guess.
I think we should all consider that this might be the last week with Aaron Ramsey on the team, right? Yes. There's a possibility. There's a chance.
Yes, and we will have a Juventus career review if he is to leave within the next few days on next week's episode.
That should be quick, right?
Yes. It'll only take a couple of minutes.
Come on, Crystal Palace.
All right. Well, as we await the Aaron Ramsey departure news, we will wrap things up there. Thank you all for your Twitter questions.
One quick shout out to that.
Yes, Joe.
Yeah, I know. It's always
come on. I'm starting to get going in my spiel.
Sorry, I hate to interrupt your flow there. Just shout out to Hunter Sharpless for the birth of his son, Monty, yes. I think it was. So
congratulations,
our former writer at Black and White and Red All Over.
Yes, we'll acknowledge Hunter, even though he is no longer one of us.
Yeah, in- traitors are recognized.
That's right. So congratulations, Hunter. And if you were actually on Twitter, maybe you could send us a Twitter question. How about that for a transition, Chucks? So
good choice, though, Evan. Good choice. And great transition.
Thank you. So as I was saying before, I was rudely interrupted by Chucks. You can send your Twitter questions into us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also follow us there, as well as on Facebook. Search Black and White and Red All Over. You can also use that same search tool on your favorite podcasting platform, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, feel free to leave us a rating and a review. We always appreciate those. So, for Sam, for Chucks, and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week during a little international break action.